Before we start this episode, I just want to put a trigger warning out there that this episode talks about abuse, rape, and suicide. And if it's something that you're not comfortable listening to, like, that's perfectly fine. You don't have to. Welcome back to It's Pretty Personal, a podcast all about love, mindset, and sharing South Asian stories. I hope you guys are having a great day, and it's been a while since I last posted an episode, I know. And this week's topic is actually going to be covered across 2 weeks. So the first part's coming out this week, and the next part is coming out next Tuesday. And as the title suggests, today we're talking about domestic abuse, and I'm joined by Carmen Singh Baines, a paralegal working family law, to give us more insight into this topic, as Carmen deals with cases of domestic abuse as part of his job. And October is actually Domestic Abuse Awareness Month, and I think it's something we should be talking about and raising awareness of, because honestly, although it's Domestic Abuse Awareness Month, I don't really think I've seen anything on my social media feeds, and I don't know if that's the same for you guys, but I think it's definitely something that really needs to change because it's such an important topic to talk about. Carmen does an amazing job in this episode in actually talking about what domestic abuse consists of. And trust me, I was so surprised with some of the things that he said because I didn't actually know that that class is domestic abuse. So I just wanted to thank Carmen for coming on this podcast and speaking about this topic because honestly, I learned so much and I know that you guys are going to learn so much too. So before we begin this episode, I just want to say if you're new to this podcast, hi, I'm Prithi and welcome to It's Pretty Personal. If you like the podcast, then please subscribe and leave a review, and especially if you're listening on Apple Podcasts. And rate it 5 stars so other people can find it and we can kind of let this community grow and have more people listen to this podcast, which would be great. And also make sure that you follow me on Instagram, TikTok and Twitter at Pretty Personal. I've started doing daily affirmations on my TikTok, Twitter and Instagram. So if you need a positive reminder, then be sure to check them out. Also, Carmen has actually started his own podcast called Bane Saini. And I mentioned them in the last episode because I actually think their podcast is really hilarious. So well done, Carmen, on starting your podcast. And if you are into desi humor or all things brown and South Asian, I think you guys will really enjoy their podcast. I'm going to link Carmen's podcast and all his social media links in the episode description below. So please check it out. So I really hope you enjoy this episode and learn something new from it. So let's get into it. Everyone. So today I have a very special guest. His name is Carmen Baines and he works in family law specializing in domestic abuse. And he helps victims who are applying to the court for protection from these abusers. So if you haven't seen from the title, today's episode is very deep. It's about domestic violence. And I'm really, really glad that I have Carmen here with me today so that he can actually talk a lot more about it being someone that's working in this field. So Carmen, thank you for joining me today.
Hi there, Prithi. Thank you for having me on this podcast and giving me this opportunity to talk about domestic violence.
I just want to know a little bit about you at the start. So like, what made you get into domestic violence?
It's a range of matters. I think it's a bit of a personal, as well as I think it was the first law job that I actually landed after graduating. I've always wanted to work in family law. So domestic abuse, domestic violence, it comes under that category. Then just started my job and now over the months working in it, I've become more passionate about this topic. I think through further research and seeing how it's become a pandemic of its own, I think it's given me the passion to now talk about it publicly.
That's really nice. So I think let's get started because we have a lot to cover in this episode. I think the first question is to ask, what is domestic abuse?
Well, there is a government definition that's been created to define what domestic abuse is. And when I say domestic abuse or domestic violence, it's the same thing, but domestic violence would be physical and domestic abuse could be anything that's not physical violence. But the government definition is defined as an incident of controlling, coercive, threatening behavior or violence or abuse between those of age 16 and or who have been an intimate partner or family members, regardless of their gender or sexuality. Now, that sounds like a very long definition. Now, half of people switched off by now, I think, hearing that. But you'd be very surprised that people actually don't know what it is because there's no single definition. But all the agencies, Crown Prosecution Service, the Metropolitan Police, and the government itself use that as a definition, but it's not set in law. So domestic abuse comes in various different categories. So as I mentioned, when it's an intimate partner or family members, so it's a relationship of two people that actually know each other. It's not just two strangers. As well as recently, Theresa May was bringing in a domestic abuse bill, which is in process. And it's split into two parts, where one part of the bill they're going to deal with relationship between abuser and the abused. And the second one will define what is abusive behavior.
There's so many different kinds of domestic abuse, right?
There's many different kinds. I'm going to start off with, so you've got controlling behavior, you've got isolation, you've got emotional abuse, you've got verbal abuse, you've got threatening behavior, physical violence, sexual abuse, damaging personal property or property, and child abuse. So I'm going to go through each one.
Wow. I never thought it would be that big. Like, to me, as a person who just hears about it, I always thought domestic abuse was when one person hits another person in a relationship. And it wasn't even like in a family setting. Like, in my head, domestic abuse is when one partner hits the other partner in a romantic relationship. I didn't know that it meant controlling behavior, isolation, damaging property. So yeah, let's go into them in like more detail.
So yeah, no, that's absolutely natural. Everyone believes it's physical violence. Is there bruises? Have you been beaten up? Did you nearly die from your husband? That's what most people think. But actually, it can be in between family members. So domestic abuse can happen husband and wife, but vice versa as well. Boyfriend, girlfriend, both ways. It could be an on and off intermittent relationship. Intermittent means on and off. So it wasn't constant relationship, but they were in an intimate relationship for 3 months or over. We sort of consider that. It could be brother and sister, family members, relatives, blood relations in between each other. So yeah, that's natural. People believe that it's just physical violence. But to start off with controlling behavior, now, this is where it's all going to get a bit more like eye-opening. So controlling behavior is very hard to define because it's a very narrow margin of what is controlling and what is just tell you what not to do and what to do. Like, I would usually ask applicants, do they tell you what you can and what you cannot wear? And, or especially towards the female victims, you can't wear makeup or wear any revealing clothing. Now, you might be thinking this is a bit odd. Now, wouldn't your partner want to tell you, oh, I don't know, they'll say, oh, babe, can you stop wearing, don't wear that dress, wear this dress. You might think, oh, okay, they're just caring for me. But say if they actually tell you, you cannot wear any revealing clothing. That's where it starts to become controlling. If you've got to think twice about what outfit you're going to wear so you don't annoy the other person, that's where it's going to start. Yeah, and stuff like you can't wear makeup. But sometimes the abusers will say, oh, if you wear makeup, you're going to sleep with other men, or you're going to cheat, or who are you going to impress? That happens all the time.
Oh my God. From a girl's perspective, like a lot of girls, we wear makeup just to make ourselves feel good. It's never for anybody's. It's interesting to see that someone else's opinion of makeup is, oh, you're going to sleep around. That's not the intention of wearing makeup. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, you know, you start to realize how crazy it can get. If anyone says they control my appearance, like 9 out of 10 chance, they'll be saying, oh, who are you going to impress? So controlling behavior is a start. This is the beginning. This is the baseline we're starting to talk about of how abuse begins. It's not going to be someone's going to punch you in the face straight away. That doesn't happen. Well, some nut jobs are like that. They might do that. So now that's appearance almost wrapped up. The next thing is financial control, which is a whole other agenda, which you sometimes don't realize. Say if you're in a relationship where one partner is working and you're not working. Now, the one who's not working is housebound or is going to be financially dependent on the other person. So say if either they don't allow you to have a bank account, which can happen. So if you don't have a bank account, you're going to be using their money. You're relying on them. Or you have a joint bank account, but they keep monitoring your spending, or they have access to your own bank card and they can check the bank statements, where you've been, what you've been doing, how much you're spending. And if they keep challenging on it, that becomes control because you're financially not able to spend the money you want. That's another aspect of controlling behavior, which also does link to financial abuse. Now, in many relationships you'll come across, one partner might be paying more than the other, or the abuser will spend large amounts of money purchasing alcohol or drugs or expensive items without asking you, which puts you in debt. Or they might undertake loans under your name without asking you. Now, that has happened many times. People have taken £20,000-£30,000 loans without asking the other person, and they just put it on their name. And then once the divorce or once the relationship breaks, they have to pay for the debt. But yeah, that's one part of controlling behavior.
That's horrible. The fact that people think it's okay, when you just said about taking loans in their name without them knowing it, that's cheeky, but also that's not nice.
Another form of controlling behavior you see in a lot of relationships is when the abuser is constantly checking your mobile phone or social media accounts to see who you're talking to or who you're communicating with. Usually they'll be going through your phone to see which particular friends you're talking to might accuse you of being unfaithful and cheating on them. And it could be simple as your friend sends you, hi, hello, how are you doing? And they say, oh, you're cheating on me. That kind of controlling behavior you don't see very often, but it happens a lot and it's not seen as abusive. The abuser can have passwords to your social media accounts and your mobile phone, so they can access everything and they will have full control of your life. It's, you know, everyone has their mobile phones and we use it every day. If they have access to your social media, they can see who's liked your picture, who your followers are, and who your close friends. And what they'll do is try and cut you off. So it ties from controlling behavior into isolation. So it happens a lot in a lot of relationships where they're checking text messages. And this puts you really on edge and it makes it difficult for you to, you know, have your own space.
You'll start to realize that all the things you're thinking of outside in a relationship. But when you're in a relationship with someone or in a family, your bonding is different. Your behavior changes.
Yeah, I know. I completely agree.
Yeah, it's not your dating phase where you're acting all good and pay for the bill. These are just initial starters. You know what I mean? Guys, they're all going to be friendly enough. The gift of the gaff, we'll say. And then after a month later, after honeymoon period, things change. And it's going to get worse as I keep going about the abuse. Isolation, that's another aspect of abuse that people don't realize. Now, in many, many, many situations, many relationships. Now, when I say relationship, I don't want it just to be intimate. It can be family as well. So if any listeners out there have witnessed father controlling son, mother controlling daughter, mother controlling son, whatnot, or whatever siblings, do remember relationship means all. So in a relationship, sometimes they can prevent you from seeing your family and friends. Well, persuade you, oh, why are you going to go out? Let's say if you get married, you want to go and see your own family. Why are you going to go there? Oh, can I come along? That's fine. But say if they're there with you every single time, you're not even alone next to your own mother or father or your siblings. Getting controlling, isn't it? You don't realize it's just what happened. Because the way the controlling behavior begins is if they isolate you from your family and friends, then no one can tell you what's right and wrong. A third person will tell you where the abuse is happening. There's many different ways of control. No one's going to tell you, oh no, outright refuse you from going to see your parents or family. But they might use different ways. They're going to say, oh, we're busy. Can we do this? Can we do that instead? Or look after the children. Or they'll just persuade you. They'll pester you. Don't go and visit them, or they might argue with you and make it so difficult that you don't want to go. So when it comes to family events, a lot of people miss their like brothers and sisters' weddings. That's how controlling it can be, because maybe they'll say, yeah, we'll go to your sister's wedding or whatnot. And then on the day, they'll just kick up a fuss, a massive argument, and then you may not go. So people have cried on the phone to me when they say they miss their brothers and sisters' weddings. And that's very frequent. The other thing, isolation, be with friends as well. Now, this is a big thing where when you go out with your friends on a night out, or you go out just to visit them, they might harass you and call you so many times and ask you where you are, who you're with, what you're doing. And they'll send you so many messages to the point where you don't even feel like going to visit your friends. And sometimes the abuser might behave in such an aggressive manner towards your family and friends that they will distance themselves from you. No one wants to be a problem in someone's relationship.
Just to clarify the bit that you said about messaging you constantly, there's a fine line between messaging someone just to see, are they okay? Are they safe? When are you coming back, out of worry? And then I guess the other end of that spectrum is every 5 minutes, where are you? Where are you? Where are you? So is that where are you what we're classing as isolation? Because in my head, I'm assuming that it's when you're constantly messaging them.
Yeah. So each thing is constantly or incessantly calling someone.
Yeah.
So it could be repeatedly 2-3 times, it could be 20 times, it could be 100 times, it can get up to 200 as well, or they actually turn up. Yeah, there's been places where they ask where you are, they'll actually just go there.
What?
Nothing past an abuser. There's many things an abuser can do, and it can get very, very far with isolation. So many people have, in domestic abuse relationships, have had broken family relationships due to it because of the abuser. The abuser might distance you from your friends for many, many years. Some just lose their contact with everyone. And once you're alone, you're vulnerable.
Yeah.
You're vulnerable to the point where you believe there's no one else other than the abuser. And oh yeah, another big one where you're not even allowed outside the house. That can happen as well. Mm. People are talking about lockdown. Now imagine you're locked down for the rest of your life. That's a different matter. There's people out there who've probably not been allowed to go outside the house or not allowed to go outside on their own. Have to be accompanied shopping, or they're not allowed to go shopping, or only allowed to do certain things like drop the children to school. That's it. So when you're so vulnerable and you're not allowed outside the house, then what do you know about the world and what do you know about the police and how do you deal with things?
So then moving on, there's obviously emotional and verbal abuse that counts as domestic violence as well.
Yeah, it's a part of domestic violence. Emotional abuse is so hard to define, but I will do my best to explain what types of emotional abuse can be. Okay, so let me try and pretend. All right, say if I say, Preeti, your podcast is average. And I say that, okay. And now, if your partner who you've got a relationship with and says, oh, yeah, Preeti, your podcast is okay, it's average. They just start nitpicking small things. Every little thing. It's not as popular. Who do you think you are? You're Oprah Winfrey or whatnot. They might just say
so just
things.
Like put yourself down, right? So they're like, yeah.
Yeah, they're good.
Okay.
How you're starting to feel a little bit like, okay. Now imagine if they belittle you by your appearance. Abusers, it's very difficult because majority of abusers are male. I have to put it out there. I'm sorry, guys, but we are. And most victims are female. So say if the abuser might say to their partner, oh, you're fat, you're this, you're that. Or they might compare you to other women. That's called belittling, putting you down, making you lose self-confidence in yourself. Or you can't do the housework properly. You don't have to look after the kids. You don't have to do this and that. The biggest one I hear is you're a bad mother. All the time.
Oh my God.
You are a bad mother.
That's horrible.
The belittling and putting you down, or gaslighting, we call it. These things, they're not swearing at you. They didn't call you an F word, C-U-N-T. They didn't call you all these words, nothing. It just put you down, but it's almost the same impact if you think about it. If it's constant, then it becomes more abusive. If it's a one-off, say if someone said, oh, yeah, the food's overcooked, then you can't start claiming domestic abuse on that if it's one-off. One-off, what I mean by controlling behavior, if it's a one-off incident has happened. If it's isolation and it's one-off, then it won't be deemed as serious. But if it's constant, meaning it's happening regular, it doesn't need to be every day, it could be every so often, but if it becomes a pattern of behavior.
Yeah.
The next one was verbal abuse. So that's a pretty easy one. Verbal abuse was consists of if someone calls you a bitch, or in slag, whore, C-U-N-T, I don't want to say it, it's just too bad. Almost 90%, I would say, out of the female victims, the man is going to call that female a bitch, slag, whore. We have threatening behavior as well. So threatening is another one, which is a form of abuse. Now, this one you can't let slide. It's quite serious. We always ask people, does he threaten to beat you or kill you? Now, that can happen in anger. Some abusers might say, I will beat you with this. They'll use a way of threats of violence, or it could be threats of throwing you out of the house. That's another one. Or I will get you sacked from the job. It's an action. It's a command word. They're going to do something to you. And then...
So another form of abuse you'll see in domestic abuse relationships is revenge porn. Now, revenge porn tends to exist in a lot of relationships amongst the younger generation due to the fact that they use social media, their mobile phones far more. Now, in an intimate relationship, partners would be sending sexually intimate pictures of each other or a picture of themselves. It is something of a sexual nature. Now, what happens is an abuser might have that content and then use it against you as a way to blackmail you into doing something you don't want to do. Or they might use it as a threat. Whatever it is, it's forcing you to do something that you do not want to do. And it can go very far and cause a lot of anxiety and fear to the victim. So yeah, revenge porn does exist and it's a form of domestic abuse. So it can be used as a controlling behavior or something as blackmail. But if anyone is going through a situation, they can contact the police and they can also contact, there's a revenge porn charities that do help individuals like this in this situation.
We've got physical violence as well, which is the main one, which everyone's going to be asking about. Physical violence comes in different forms. It could be, it's very hard because there's a lot of things, punching, kicking each other, slapping each other, strangling, using a weapon to attack someone, smashing them against another item could be a form of violence. Throwing an item at them that hits them, violence is there. Most cases we have, especially with female victims, is they usually get strangled, slapping in the face and pulling their hair with force, like actual like force. I mean, like you're talking of pulling them to the ground, that kind of level. Sometimes some physical violence doesn't leave any marks, but it's still physical violence.
So are there any other types that class as domestic violence?
So there is sexual abuse. We all know that rape is violence because it's forceful or forceful nature. The next eye-opening things you're going to hear is there's another whole area of sexual abuse that no one's really seen or thought that it's domestic abuse. Now, we've had many cases where a male is an abuser. They will pester their partner to have sexual intercourse with them, like pestering. Now, they're not going to ask you once. They're not going to ask you twice. They're going to keep going until you agree to do so. They will push you to the point where you're going to give in and have sexual intercourse. That's actually a form of sexual abuse.
That's forceful consent.
Forceful consent, yeah. The other person said, well, yeah, she consented, but not after asking 100 times.
Yeah.
If the woman says, no, I don't want to have sex with you, then the male abuser will say, oh, wait, you don't love me. Oh, I'll go to another woman then. They'll say this sort of stuff. This stuff has happened. They'll say, I'll go to another woman. Yeah, there's some brave people out there. Sexual abuse can be also touching as well, sexual assault. So sometimes they just might touch your body inappropriately all the time when it's unwanted. When it's not consensual and the other person's saying no, but they continue to do so, then that becomes sexual abuse.
Yeah.
But in 1991, marital rape has become illegal in the UK. Before then, it wasn't, but rape in a marriage is still rape. But sometimes in the eyes of a victim, you think, oh, wait, we're in a relationship, so it's not rape. But
I think that's
rape.
Education. I think that's people knowing that consent is so important. Moving forward, I wanted to talk about like the statistics.
So we've got a few statistics that I managed to dig out. Now, it's very tricky. For some odd reason, in the UK, we can't seem to find stats about an issue that happens to anyone in this country. So what I found was from March 2018 to March 2019, this is registered, around 2.4 million adults between 16 and 74 experienced domestic abuse. Now, this is police stats, 2.4 million adults. Now, this is only registered. We haven't even considered unregistered, which is these are just probably the 20% of the population for domestic abuse. Now, out of the 2.4 million, 1.6 million were women and 786,000 were men.
Very big numbers for such a small country.
Well, bigger countries, bigger
problems.
Yeah,
I'm just thinking like the UK is kind of tiny and like 2 million people, like that's the size of a small country. If we're actually putting it into a perspective, that is the size of a small country. That's the amount of people in this small country have been abused.
There's so many unreported domestic abuse cases or people experiencing domestic abuse because going to the police, taking action on what your situation, it takes a lot. So I would estimate this could be even double, triple or quadruple the amount. We could be probably nearing double figures if it was. Also, if you think about out of the 2.4 million, how many actually go to court and how many actually take action? Very, very, very few. I've got a few more other statistics. Like some agencies like the National Domestic Abuse Helpline, they had a 49% rise of domestic abuse incidences since the lockdown. So 49% rise is very high. This is the next alarming stat. So in the first 3 weeks of the lockdown, 14 women were killed and 2 children were killed in domestic abuse.
The first 3 weeks?
First 3 weeks of domestic abuse, 14
women.
Oh
my God. We've been in lockdown technically for like, I want to say like 14, 15 weeks. That's crazy.
Many more. Yes. It's surprising that it's not talked about as often because it can happen to anyone. Like in the UK, we're only just digging out statistics and we're starting to realise domestic abuse is happening. Think about the countries that haven't yet.
It is alarming. So moving on, listening to those stats, why are most victims in domestic abuse situations female?
Yeah, it's actually quite difficult. I tried to look into it in research, but I'm going to give a bit more of my own personal experience and my own theories as well, which you might agree or disagree. I think when with females, physically, females are weaker than men, right? Physically.
In the eyes of society.
In the eyes of society. Yeah, before everyone goes after me, I don't want to be getting crucified. For some odd reason, what we tend to see is that the victim that we come across, females, the physical aspect is there as well, because let's say if they have to restrain a victim, if it's a female victim, they're able to control the physical aspect. And the next thing I think is more psychologically. I think females tend to be, and this is the eyes of society, more emotionally attached to their partners, I would say. The emotional connection is there than males, we may say. I mean, it's not saying that all males don't have any emotion or care, but you know, this is what we see. Now, I've had victims where they know the abuser. They've been done for domestic abuse in the past with their previous partners, but they're still in the relationship. People don't realize, every victim that I speak to, when they're on the phone to me, they've gone through already 20, 30 incidences already till they even get to me. Now, that's a huge problem. So with females, we might see that if the abuser is a complicated person, he's got aggression or anger problems, maybe alcoholic, addicted to drugs. But sometimes females might believe, this is general perspective, that they want to fix the abuser. They want to make the abuser a better person. There's the idea that he loves me because, you know, he's controlling, but he loves me. He wants me mentally. He's looking out for me. That's why he's always calling me all the time. There's all these theories that come around that makes the victim feel that this is their relationship, that the abuser is actually not an abuser. He just loves me. Females tend to stick through the relationship maybe a bit more than men do. It's from my experience, from what I've seen in the job. There's many, many different theories, and it hasn't been researched as much for why female victims are prevalent, but it also comes down to the psychological aspect. It could be men as well, how they're psychologically built in a way. And sometimes men can be controlling, they can be manipulative, and they can use their words and ways to manipulate the female to remain in that relationship. And they might use fear as well. So that intimidating factor. But I mean, what's your thoughts? What do you think?
I think it's just horrible. I understand when you said trying to fix that relationship. I think the intention is a nice intention. And I think one thing that I really wish women would learn, and I'm such an advocate for women's rights and women being independent. I think it's so important that women are independent. So I wish that we can, as society, we should teach women, this is your right. Like, I think a lot of times, like when you're explaining this, it just makes them sound like these women are suppressed. And I feel like everyone has so much potential, and it's just really sad to think that people are living like this. And I'm so glad that you actually are talking about it, because it's a very important topic that we need to talk about as well.
The thing is, I didn't come on this podcast just to talk about and consult victims. I really need to find solutions, yeah. And that's more important. That's what I'm here for. So yeah, these are things that I'm trying to look into. If this carries on, all you're going to have is the same cycle. Be more female victims, more abuse cases, and more men being abusive. So we're trying to work with both fronts. Look after the victims, but stop the abusers. It has to work on both fronts. There's no point just looking after victims, because there's just going to be more and more cases. This stuff doesn't stop. You know, since humans have been on this earth, domestic abuse has been around. Domestic abuse is not going to end. COVID will end. Domestic abuse won't. It goes up and goes down. It peaks at Christmas because of people and families get together. Peaks at Easter. And then it goes up, down again. And then it goes back up. But it's always there.
I think it's important to educate people on it, though. I think it's important to people to be like the different types of domestic abuse that you said. I think a lot of people didn't know that. So I think it's so important to keep educated.
Constantly learn and constantly apply it is the most important thing. But the male psychological behavior is important as well, because as in the eyes of a male, sometimes they can easily come across as controlling, because men do have some sort of insecurity about their partners. They don't want to be cheated on. They think other men will go after. They have this sort of insecure in their mind, but they never release it. These emotions don't come out in front. They're not going to tell you it, but their behaviors can show that. Men also can be, after the honeymoon period of a relationship, it can become very toxic when they start opening up about their problems. And as that leads to obviously male mental health as well, but men also, they've got a lot of things we've got to work on. We have to work on ourselves a lot. The biggest thing is, how do we control our anger is the biggest, biggest thing. If there's a female, anyone out there listening to this, you got to assess what that man is like when he's angry. If he can control it and tame himself and doesn't hit you, doesn't lash out you verbally or emotional abuse. Sometimes emotional abuse might be here and there, but it depends what it is. But they actually understand they made a mistake. And when they say sorry, they mean it. It's not, sorry for calling you a slag yesterday. I was drunk. Like, that happens so much. Oh, I was drunk. It was the alcohol that made me do it. These are the major, major things. So as men, we have to actually look at ourselves, to look at our own mental health, but we also need to look at how we treat others. Because at the end of the day, majority of us are abusers. 80% cases of abusers will be male. So it's around figures of what I have for my work. So yeah.
So what is life like for a victim of domestic abuse?
Very, very hard. That's what I'm going to start off with. Going through domestic abuse is probably the worst thing you might have. One of the worst, I would say. Because if abuse happens from a stranger, it doesn't hurt as much as it happens from your loved one. When someone who you care about and love, abuse from them is soul-destroying. It can drive people to suicide. The mental health aspect is unreal. Pretty much most of the cases we'll come across will have depression, anxiety, post-traumatic stress disorder. All sorts of mental health conditions arise out of domestic abuse relationships. So life as a victim, it's not overnight. It's happened slowly, prolonged period of time. But in your mind, you're going to start becoming normalized to things that are not normal. Either being sworn at, being beaten up, being controlled, not allowed to do things. At the same time, a victim always feels that what they're going through is only them in the world. They're going through that. I usually tell them this is normal. It gives them a sense of confidence. And also at the same time, it tells them that what they're going through, there's many other people out there going through the same, which is true. It'll take a lot of confidence to even take the first step to either call the police or speak to someone or speak to a family member or go to a domestic abuse organization. And life like as a victim with the police, it's an up and down one. Very, very difficult. Police, we always say call them. Yes, you have to, which I say any person listening to this, if you're going through an incident and you feel you're in danger, you have to call the police. There's no other way around it. But sometimes with the police, they might take 3 hours to come to your house. How are we going to do then if someone's coming taking that long? Or the police might come, arrest the abuser, and then release them the next day. So that means the abuser can walk back in and do it again. A lot of many people think, oh yeah, we'll put them in jail. When it actually happens, you're going to back out. I would say a good 70% you'll probably back out because it's hard. You don't want to go court proceedings, criminal court. It's a very scary experience to go through all that, giving statements against your husband or loved one, and their family might contact you and friends saying, oh, you're putting him in jail. Or they might tell the children, oh, look, mommy's putting me in jail. You put yourself in a mindset of that, you're going to back out. It's an easy option. But police have worked on it, but they're still expanding on it. It's a lot of work the police have to do right now because, unfortunately, there's many cases where abusers get away with things very easily because there's lack of evidence. Like some of them might say, oh, I didn't do that. They just say, no, I didn't do this, I didn't that. Lack of evidence, they release them. So what happens, I'm going to explain to people what it is. So the police, say if it was a domestic abuse call, the police will come, you arrest or take evidence, they'll do an investigation. Then the police will pass it on to another branch called the Crown Prosecution Service. They're kind of criminal lawyers on behalf of the government. These are the ones who are going to prosecute the criminals. They're the ones who are actually going to, simple language, prisoners into jail. This is a court proceeding. So they're part of the prosecution. Now they have to gather evidence. They'll decide whether they're going to press criminal charges or not. It's not in your hands to press it all the time. It's a very complicated system. Being a victim of domestic abuse, you start realizing how broken our system is and it needs work.
What are the signs that we should look for if we suspect that someone, like for example, a friend or someone in our family is going through domestic abuse?
It is difficult to see what is domestic abuse and what is not. It's not written on their forehead whether they're going through it or not. They're not going to tell you. They might say it in different ways. As I've explained at the top, emotional, verbal, threatening, controlling, isolation, those are the things you need to have in your head. Then you start seeing signs. If someone is going through abuse, it's probably going to be if you feel they're not living their life the way they used to live before. Sometimes you might see in the past, you would go out with your friends quite a lot, but all of a sudden you're in a relationship and now you're not visiting any of your friends or family. You're being isolated. You might be controlled. We don't know. The signs you've got to look out for is just how they communicate with you, how they've changed. Are they happy in their relationship? You may ask them, what's their feelings towards their partner? It's very difficult to see signs. I think they would come to you if they want your advice and they'll explain to you that this is what I'm going through.
So let's take a little bit of a detour and talk about male victims, because like we said in the stats before, there are male victims of domestic abuse in the UK. How do their cases differ and how do men deal with domestic abuse?
Male victims of domestic abuse, it's slightly different. You'll have a small percentage of cases where there'll be physical violence towards males, which does happen. And the majority of the cases that I've come across is it's a high level of controlling and emotional abuse and verbal. And this leads on to how men deal with domestic abuse, is that when it comes to male victims, they tend to become more suicidal for some reason. So men do treat domestic abuse very differently. They feel ashamed of speaking that they're being abused because we have this mindset that, oh, don't be whipped by your wife or don't be whipped by her. Should they make that sound?
Yeah.
You know how they do it. They make it sound like, you know, any man that's being whipped is a whim. And they say these sort of language. And men actually think they are that when they're a victim. They really think that, oh, I'm not a man anymore. Yeah, they become very suicidal. I've had many male victims talk about what they were actually going to do to themselves.
That's a very scary thought.
Male victims are underregarded and sometimes when they go to court as well, the judges might laugh at them as well at certain things. The attitude towards a male victim is different towards a female. the female victim, we're going to be more warmer, softer, we're going to agree to them, we're actually going to believe it. With male victims, you might think, there must be something he's done wrong. It's very different. And there is a few organizations out there that help. And sometimes they're very ashamed of going to the police because the police might judge them that they're weak.
I think there is this stigma, like you just said, against male domestic abuse violence, which I think is a stigma that we as a society need to also break, because men also have emotions and men also do go through the same things as women do. It's just the fact that we need to also put their emotions into the spotlight as well.
Yeah, it's very important.
So if you are a victim of domestic abuse, what should you be doing? If you want help, how can a victim of domestic abuse have help?
Okay, so if you're a victim of domestic abuse, the first step is you need to recognize what are you being abused by. You need to recognize, and in your mind, you'll be going through a lot of things. I think the best thing you can do is, if you're in this situation, is have a diary and a log of things going on. It's so important that you can remember things that are happening. What date? What happened? Just a brief note. So you know the dates. You actually got a timeline in your head of what's happened and what major incidents have happened. Then, and I want to make sure that even going through anything right now, you realize there are actually many organizations out there to help you. It's just the first step you got to take. That big first step leads you to further support. You can either speak to a family member or a friend, third party that knows you, that you feel comfortable with, to open up with. Speak to them and just talk to them about your relationship and see what they say and ask them, do you feel this is normal or not? That's one step that you can see. Another one is contact a domestic abuse organization, which is a third party. You don't need to go outside your house these days. You can just call them on the phone or talk to them on the internet. You can contact Women's Aid. They're a big organization. They work across the whole country. You can talk to Men's Aid. There's other domestic violence organizations. Just type it on the internet. You'll find many. Call them up and speak to an advisor, and they'll just take a brief statement, or they'll just ask you what you're going through. Now, if you're telling a third person that you don't know over the phone, you don't need to worry about if they know you, if they're going to tell the abuser. Second, they are not related to you, so they'll give you an opinion from a third party that's not biased. So contacting a domestic abuse organization is important. And if your abuser is in the same house as you, just go outside for a walk and just call them. That's what happened. I've taken many statements and people's files while they're walking on the street. They can't talk in the house. So that's the one thing. And then another step is contact the police. Just call 101. Which is the number for if it's not an emergency call. If it's emergency, you're going to dial 999. But if you call the police, you can actually get referred, or they can have a chat with you. Because nothing's going to happen. If you call the police, they're not going to arrest the abuser straight away. They're going to have a chat with you and see what's going on. Maybe you can get help from there. They can refer you to local organizations that you can visit. So that first step is crucial. And say if you want to get a protection order. Now, these are things what I help out in. You can apply for a non-molestation order, which is an application made to the family courts. And what a non-molestation order is made by yourself. Now, when you apply for that order, it prevents the abuser from contacting you, intimidating you, harassing you, using third parties to harass you. And there are other orders you can include on there, but that's the basic order you can get yourself if you feel you're being abused. So you can do things. And then also you can get the police to put an application for a restraining order. Well, you can ask, and depends if they want to grant it for you. So there are many options. And another one I always tell people is go to your local doctor, because the local doctors, day in, day out, do actually see domestic victims all the time, because that's the first place you're going to go when you're medically assessed. And hospital staff are trained as well these days to look out for victims. You see bruises on their body and start asking questions. Always a victim always says, oh, I fell down the stairs, or I bumped into a cupboard. Maybe not. And when you speak to a doctor, it's confidential. They're not going to tell anyone. So have faith in these organizations. Just take that first step. When you speak to them, you actually get an idea of what's going on and gain vital knowledge of what you can and cannot do.
And I'm going to actually link some of the agencies in the bio. So if anyone wants to check them out, it will be easy access in the episode description. So that was part one. I feel like it's such a big topic that I decided to split my conversation with Carmen into two parts. So next week's episode, we're actually talking about domestic abuse, but in the South Asian community. And from that conversation, I can honestly say that it's a massive problem in our community. And I'm kind of really excited to share that conversation with you guys so that you guys can also have a deeper insight onto the struggles that our community face when it comes to domestic abuse. I've added some helplines below in the episode description. So if you are going through this, or you have a friend or someone in your family or anyone that you know that's going through this and doesn't know how to get help, maybe the helplines and some of the information in the episode description can help you guys, because I really, really hope that this episode helps someone. So let me know what you've learned from this episode, and please share it with your friends, family, or anyone you think will relate or resonate with this. And that's all from this week. Like I said, I'll talk to you guys next week. Take care. Bye.